This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Scientists agree that more extreme weather events will hit most of the Earth as the climate shifts. Studies of Americans after Hurricanes Katrina and Sandy showed increased and continuing mental health problems, including post-traumatic stress disorder. Is it possible each hit of climate change could leave the general population less able to deal with the next? What about the impacts of extreme weather in developing countries, where studies are seldom done? Now we know more, thanks to research published in the journal BMC Public Health. Three authors combed through the records in South America and Asia following extreme weather events. Let's see what they found. Our guest is Elizabeth Rataille, and she's the lead author. Elizabeth grew up in Saxony, Germany, where she obtained a Master of Public Health at the University of Dresden. She did the research on the lasting impacts of severe weather while working in Dresden in the Center for Evidence-Based Healthcare. Now employed by a large German development agency, Elizabeth is an advisor at the Department of Education in the autonomous region in Muslim Mindanao in the Philippines. From the Philippines, Elizabeth Rataille, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Hey, Alex. Nice to meet you. Thank you very much for calling.
Well, I'm glad we connected. Now, what led you and your co-authors, of course, to investigate the specific impact of extreme weather, and you looked outside the usually studied places like Europe, America, or Japan? Why?
Well, actually, all three of us have lived and worked in developing countries before we actually met in Dresden. So Susan, before she became a psychologist, she worked in India. Catherine was in Northeast Africa, and I spent a couple of years in Southeast Asia and also in regions of South and West Africa. So, and I remember during the time we met, there was a flood of the Elbe River in Dresden, to whom of you might this place be familiar, and a lot of people were displaced and they had to clear their houses. And I think all three of us remember that those kind of events are very different for people in the places where we actually lived before. And yeah, there, I think that was one trigger why we came up with a question like this. And of course, we're all interested in this kind of topic.
Yes, well, Dresden would have all the resources and people to look after people after they'd gone through the event. And you wouldn't find that elsewhere. And that's what we're going to talk about. So what sort of extreme weather did you look into?
Well, we looked for floods, droughts, storms, and heat waves. And we did a systematic search on that.
But I thought I saw in the paper that you decided not to include heat waves.
Oh, we did actually include them in our search, but we didn't find any. So we didn't identify any droughts and any heat waves. And, yeah, I don't know, we came up with different excuses or different reasons why this might have happened. For example, I think both of those disasters are, like, creeping, so you don't really identify when they start and when they end. So this actually makes it very difficult to start collecting data and do research on these things.
But I have to say, that doesn't mean there weren't any heat waves, because I remember some very extreme heat waves in India and Pakistan, for example.
Oh, definitely there were. Yeah, correct.
So where are some of the countries that you included in your study?
Well, we identified studies from India, from Vietnam, China, Nicaragua, and yeah, a couple of studies in those countries, and a single study in Mexico, a single study from Honduras, and from Bangladesh as well.
Well, that's going to give you good representation. How many individuals would you say were included in this research?
Well, in our systematic review, we in the end included 17 studies, and this comprises more than 70,000 people. Yeah, the individual studies go from 125 people in one study up to 25,000 people in another study. So the range is really, like, quite broad.
And your paper divides the impacts into primary outcomes and secondary outcomes. Why is that?
Yeah, we choose the secondary or the primary outcomes to be post-traumatic stress disorder and injuries. And for the secondary outcomes, it's anxiety and depressive disorders. To divide like this is usually done in systematic reviews in order to prioritize the outcomes and to put out the relevance for the actual research question.
Okay, now the two primary problems that might come up right after a violent storm or flood, beyond the deaths that may occur, of course, are direct injury, which you studied, and post-traumatic stress disorder, known as PTSD. First of all, why did you include injury in your study?
Well, we are actually interested in healthcare and healthcare infrastructure in general. So that's why I decided not to look only into mental health and mental health related structures, but also like for a physical disease. And additionally, like, if we are in developing countries, mental health illnesses are very often neglected and not very well researched at all. So to make sure we actually find something, that's why we choose to go for those both options.
And there is a myth out there that goes something like this. PTSD is just a first world problem. Peasants living close to the land, they're very hardy. They bounce right back. They don't have time for mental problems. True or false?
Oh, false. I absolutely disagree. Well, first of all, PTSD is not a mental problem. It's a disease that's internationally recognized and classified. And, well, I mean, we are all equal. If I break a leg, that could happen to you, to same to you as well, Alex, or to some people in Africa or in Bangladesh. So there is no difference.
But you couldn't exactly go around interviewing, you know, tens of thousands of people in hard-to-get-to places. Elizabeth Ratai, how did you and your team do this research?
We defined our research question, and for this research question, we decided on eligibility criteria, what we are actually looking for, what kind of people, what kind of disasters, what kind of studies, so we can actually pool them together. Then we identified the most relevant databases that we were going to look into, and then we started a search. So we searched 6 databases, we hand-searched 2 additional journals. We also hand-searched the reference lists of those studies we actually included. Yeah, then we ended up with like 927 studies. We screened all their titles and abstracts and then kicked out the studies that were not relevant, ended up with 38 studies. And we really looked into detail in each of these 38 studies. And again, we kicked out those studies that did not fit with our eligibility criteria. And that's why 17 studies remained. And we really looked very closely into those 17 studies.
And that helps us develop the bigger picture of what is happening in many places of the world. Well, let's say a violent storm wipes out a city in the Philippines or a flood destroys a shanty town in East Asia. What happens to the children who survive?
Well, children are most of all more vulnerable, especially physically, if you just look at them. So in case they lose their parents, often they will be given to relatives, and especially relatives are less sensitive to take care or to observe their behavior, so they would not easily detect mental diseases. Well, if they end up with a relative, they're actually lucky most of the time. Well, most of them end up on the street being street children. Currently, I live here in the Philippines, and street children is a very, very big thing. Most of the coastal cities of all, you have so many, like in Cebu and Davao, Manila, you have millions of street children. And many of them actually, I think, do have a background of tsunamis, of typhoons coming, of landslides destroying their villages. That's, I think, a main cause of their story.
Well, aside from the geological causes, which are just part of the Philippines, I think we could also say that these may be the first signs of climate refugees. These are kids who have been displaced by extreme storms, extreme weather. Maybe that's how it will begin to appear. Although I have to say there were kids in 1992 in Rio de Janeiro when I was there, a lot of street kids. So it's not an entirely new phenomenon, but it's growing. But then again, Elizabeth, there's this urban myth that kids get over traumas quickly. Do kids get PTSD, for example?
Oh, well, actually, Alex, in the PTSD was researched in kids first. And I think it started in 1980, and they started researching on PTSD, and they exclusively looked into children in the beginning, and later on only in adults, also in adults. So they do get this disease as well, to answer your question. Well, I also hear that you're asking whether they are experiencing less or more PTSD, and I think the literature is not quite clear about that. Some studies would state that children suffer less from PTSD, which would mean they can also get this disease. And some other studies also come up saying they're not easily affected, so meaning they don't get it so easily. But, yeah, I think there's a big gap in research or more research needed, especially in developing countries.
That's interesting. All right. And I looked into weather-driven PTSD stories in America, and there were a lot of people saying They get nervous every time the weather forecast plays on TV or certain sounds set them off, like the wind blowing something around the yard or just looking up at clouds and feeling nervous. What is your picture of what happens to extreme weather survivors?
Well, if you're pointing at a difference between the developing world and the Western world, I think there might not be so much of a difference between the survivors. They have the same symptoms. They have flashbacks. They will avoid triggering situations and thoughts. A lot of them have sleeping disorders because they are afraid of having those nightmares again. So this is, I think, the same all over the world. PTSD develops basically in two ways. It fades away with the time for some people, so the symptoms really get less. And for other people, it gets chronic. And it might also develop into different diseases like anxiety disorders and depressions, suicide for some of them. So that's really broad if it's not treated well. And that brings me to the next point. Well, the way how it's dealt with is very different in developing countries than from the Western world. I think that makes the big difference.
Well, what is the difference? What happens in developing countries that's different than in the Western world?
If you look at their healthcare systems, they're often very basic, and they're not so much sensitive, and most of the place not so much sensitive. It's not so much funding for treating mental diseases. They're not as obvious as a broken leg that I referred to earlier, although it's a disease just like that.
You are tuned to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with my guest public expert, Elizabeth Rataille. And we're talking about the long-lasting impacts on the humans who experience extreme weather events. Well, let's move on, Elizabeth, to the secondary outcomes you tracked. What does that mean?
Our secondary outcomes were anxiety disorders and depressive disorders. We decided to add this one to our main research question as secondary outcomes, and we actually only found six studies that looked into that, and those six studies actually also just added to their original research. So those studies were actually looking into PTSD, and they added anxiety disorders, depressive disorders to that, because it's not so easy to find data on that, and it's not so easy to identify. That's why we added it like this.
Okay. And do you think that people lose some of their faith in the goodness of life if they've been through a typhoon, a flood, or a similar event?
I'm not sure, and part of me really disagrees, because what I've experienced living in developing countries for quite a bit now, that the less people have, the more satisfied they are, if they are not like in desperate hunger or in pain. But a lot of them have very strong faith in God, or whatever religion they belong to. And even if they are hit by a disaster, they would often manage to maintain their optimism or their resources to manage. For example, they would lose their house, and then they would be happy, say, oh, but I found my son, and I'm happy that I still have my relatives. That's what I often experienced. And, I mean, on the other hand, they're just so very used to it, because they really, like, they experience disaster like this more often, and they are, well, the harm they experience with the disaster is much more than, if you remember the Elbe River, just having a little bit more water. I mean, people have their basements underwater, but here people lose their whole house. That's the difference.
I understand. Did you find an increase in what could be called clinical depression?
Well, clinical depression would be the major depressive disorder. And I looked it back up in this study, and there's actually two of the studies we included specifically looked for that. And they found an increase. One study is talking about a typhoon that happened in Vietnam, and they found a 5.9% increase. And the other one was done in India after a cyclone hit the country, and they found a 17.6% increase, which is pretty interesting. I mean, there is an increase at all. But what we also found, like, if we do a systematic review, we try to pool those studies. We can also pool their data if certain requirements are given. But for this case, it was unfortunately not possible, because one study was, or I think for this one study, they got the data half a year after disaster had happened. The other study only got the data after 2 years that the disaster struck the country. So that makes it so much different. Some of them only exclusively looking into students, the other one looking at the whole entire population. So that makes it very difficult to merge data, which would be more helpful to have more stronger evidence-based data.
Do we know, Elizabeth, if the lingering stress after extreme weather affects local economies or even the national economy?
I would definitely agree. However, I think it depends on the impact, how strong the impact was of the disaster. I mean, if there is like a flood, the local markets really are affected. People lose their houses. They would need to start rebuild. They would need to start buying new construction material. On the other hand, there is not so much available on the market. It makes the price go up. People are unemployed if the local infrastructure is destroyed. So it definitely affects the local markets. And it also goes up to national level if the disaster is on bigger scale. So I think it's actually, sadly, a downward spiral. So if there's no measures in place and if there's no international aid coming in.
Yes. Elizabeth, why is it difficult to research what happens in Africa?
Oh, that's a very big question. I think there's one main reason is that there's so much poverty. So there's hardly any funds from those countries themselves to do research, to properly do data assessment, to put into place monitoring evaluation systems. Big issue also for organizations going into those countries encouraging research would be the problems of peace and disorder, that there's war, there's areas where you cannot go, you would need to have local communities that you're working with. And this really takes a lot of time. And if you're asking for funding, you need to have like a timeline and beginning and end. But this is two systems come together here that are very, very difficult to combine, or you really have to do like and splits between the demand of the status of doing research and on the other hand, what's actually possible, doable in the country.
Well, let's say that we have a situation where there's many deaths in a developing country from some extreme event. And in the West, we briefly see the news reports with displaced people and suffering. Maybe there's a fundraising drive, and then it's over for us. Elizabeth, what can be done to overcome this short-term response and memory, to really plan for what will surely happen again and again?
I do have to go a step back here. There speaks the health worker in me. I think prevention is better than cure, and we should always start preventing first. So I see a strong responsibility on our side of those living in, well, for not for me at the moment because I'm in the Philippines, but living in the Western world. And most of what they are experiencing is due to our behavior, our lifestyle. So I could just encourage each one of us to buy local, use trains, fly less, all those sort of things would already help in the first place. Yeah, and then secondary and tertiary prevention would be strengthen the M&E system of the countries themselves, helping them with data gathering, yeah, and those sort of things.
And is part of that building up primary health care in these developing countries to respond quickly when disaster arrives, or as you say, to put in public health measures that might really help ahead of time?
Well, it's both. I mean, since disasters are already happening, you need to prevent them from coming back. And there is already a lot of learning, which you should definitely include. And then you should try to build systems for response. I think most of those countries have very good infrastructure already in place. So we should actually strengthen their own systems. Yeah, they're very creative often. They have their nurses, mobile clinics. And the place where I live, my street doesn't even have a name. So people don't really have addresses or houses, but they have two, three, four mobile phones. So they are actually very good equipped with. Well, that would encourage us to use new technology. They know how to use apps and all those kind of data. So that's a way we could also just work and reach them with a healthcare system.
Through the phone. Is there anything else you would like to add or talk about?
Thank you for inviting me and giving me the opportunity to share.
Well, we've been discussing an article published in September 2016 in the journal BMC Public Health. The title is Extreme Weather Events in Developing Countries and Related Injuries and Mental Health Disorders, a Systematic Review. And that's an open access article, so anyone can read it. And you can find links to this article and my guest in my weekly show blog at ecoshock.org. We've been talking with the lead author, Elizabeth Ratai. She did this research at the Dresden Center for Evidence-Based Healthcare. Elizabeth is now employed by a large German development agency whose name I cannot actually pronounce. Elizabeth, please tell us the name of that in German.
That would be the Deutsche Gesellschaft für internationale Zusammenarbeit. Thank you.
Well, I'm glad you did it, not me. Thank you so much for helping us understand the longer-term effects of these extreme weather events.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
We are out of time. Thank you for listening, and join me again next week.